And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Ooh, yeah. What's that theme song? You know what time it is if you're a USF fan. It's our first episode of RBLR Bulls, where we're covering just all USF exclusive stuff, all USF content. And we've got a new member of the RBLR crew. If y'all are, you know, coming back and thinking, who the heck is this guy in the middle with his awesome Ray stuff back there? Jonathan Shields. Jonathan, if you'd like to introduce yourself and tell the crowd a little bit about yourself. I don't know. Just come up with a bio on the spot. I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, like Carter said, I'm Jonathan Shields. I was born and raised in the Tampa Bay area. I cover the Rays for Locked On Sports. I do their postcast after every single Rays game. I host a daily Bucks podcast with the Believe podcast network over there. So, yeah, you know, we've just been around the area for a while. I worked with the Utah Jazz and Utah Hockey Club this year in their broadcast department as well. So, yeah, you know, just one of those, just like Carter and everyone else affiliated with this, just love sports, love all things kind of the Tampa Bay area, and, you know, just happy to be a part of this.
Heck yeah. So if I remember correctly, though, which is the perfect week to bring this up, you're a UF guy, though, right? Not a USF.
I was born and raised going to Florida games. My dad was a Bull Gator. I am a Gator, but growing up in the Tampa Bay area, I've always been very interested in USF, obviously. And when I started growing, like when I really started getting into football, that's when USF, the last time USF was, you know, really good. So, yeah, so obviously growing interest in there, and, you know, it's never, you know, a first team, second team kind of thing. It's always like, you know, I always root for the teams in the area besides UCF, to be completely honest.
yeah, screw the
Knights. And Miami and Florida State also.
Right, yeah.
Mostly UF and USF.
Yeah, hey, it's all good. It's all good. That's the main combo. You know, that's the main combo. I feel you. And then we got Musab Tariq. He's our Bucks guy. You know, he's on the same show as I am with the Bucks all the time. Y'all know Musab, but say hello, Musab. How you doing tonight?
Doing well. What a perfect time to, you know, to be starting this. New journey, but no, man. I'm just excited, and I'm just stoked to see, first of all, you know, where we take this, but as well as where does USF take us this year?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's in all avenues, by the way. Just in case I didn't do a good enough job explaining what this is, we're going to be covering all sports USF related. This episode is going to be pretty football focused, though, because, you know, in case you're living under a rock, big football stuff this past week. But we'll definitely talk about some basketball, as well as their baseball team, which is pretty good. And any other sports that pop up. I know their soccer team has been playing pretty well. Maybe some track and field stuff. I know that their track and field team was, I think, ranked in the top 25 or something.
Really, they I believe NCAA champions in the 4x1 or 4x4.
Yeah. They've got amazing athletics across the board. It's not just football and basketball. Those will be the two sort of main sports that we talk about for, you know, this semester, if you will. Sorry, I'm in work speak. I work in college textbook sales, but yeah, so we'll be talking about all USF sports. But specifically right for this episode, we'll be talking about football, and we'll get right into it because we've kind of beaten around the bush here. Big time win, Boise State, ranked team, first time since 2019. It's been 6 years since USF has had victory versus a top 25 ranked opponent. Boise State was a playoff team last year. Obviously, Ashton Jeanty, big part of that success, and he is now a Las Vegas Raider. He's moved on to the NFL, but they still had a lot of returning starters, and they were a pretty darn good team on paper. So a 34-7 win for USF, that's pretty huge. I kind of compared this in my mind, at least. I don't know about y'all. This is a while ago, but almost two decades to be precise. They beat Auburn in the beginning of the season, and I thought that was just one of the craziest victories I'll ever see as a USF fan, and it was awesome. I was kind of young, like 6 or 7 years old, not to age myself, but it was still crazy. And how does this compare to other wins in USF history, Jonathan? I'll start with you, man, compared to Auburn, the Auburn game, or any other big-time victories for USF.
That's a great point, because recently it's been, USF almost beat Bama.
Right.
It took Bama to the fourth quarter and almost won. Yeah. And the way the game started, and I listened to Alex Gold's press conference, I think it was yesterday, or it might be Tuesday. It was Tuesday, whenever you guys are watching this, listening to this. And he was saying that, you know, the offense got off to a slow start. He was saying that kind of Boise did some stuff schematically that they thought was a little bit different. They were a little bit too hard-headed in that first quarter. And after the first quarter, they just completely turned it on. And right. It kind of showed what I thought the ceiling of this team can be. When, you know, listening to other wins is tricky because, like you said, Boise was a playoff team last year. They weren't just a playoff team. They had a bye.
Right.
Way the playoff system works. So doing it by that system is their biggest win in 6 years since their last ranked win. But I thought the domination in which they won with, specifically defensively, which was not a strong suit last year for them,
right,
was the most impressive for me. And that's why this win for USF feels a little bit different than a few of the wins in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a big factor for me too. Like, you know, I figured Byron Brown and this offense, high tempo, you know, just a gas pedal to the floor type of offense that they run. I figured that they'd probably take Boise State a little bit aback. So I figured it'd be maybe a little bit more high scoring than people were expecting. But yeah, the defense getting all locked down, I mean, that was really impressive. Musab, what were your thoughts on this game overall compared to, you know, previous USF wins against big time opponents?
Oof. Well, I'll tell you this. I know USF has had a couple of pretty big time wins against some schools in the past. I know, like, I remember when I first fell in love with Quentin Flowers, it was, I think he took down Texas Tech in the Birmingham Bowl.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So, but I mean, I got to say, you know, the Auburn win, I didn't realize how iconic it was until, you know, later on finding out, you know, how successful USF was throughout that whole season, eventually reaching number two. But this was a huge game just after kind of the ups and downs we've had. Even last year, things were just looking off. So to come out, and I mean, we came out swinging. This was not the USF got lucky game. This was like USF is embarrassing Boise State. You know, this is not the Boise State we know about, you know, from last year. So, no, defense showed out big time, of course. And then, you know, even offense, I mean, we had a couple of pretty iconic plays.
Yes.
It was a memorable game for sure, man, especially being that it was week one. I mean, to start out like that, that's big.
Right, absolutely. And speaking of those big plays, I mean, there were a lot of them, like you said. I mean, I think for me, like the biggest sort of play that it was like, oh, like USF might be doing this, I think was definitely the fake punt for the touchdown to Keyshawn Singleton from the backup quarterback, the freshman. I think he's from St. Augustine, Lachlan Hewlett. I don't mean to mispronounce his name. But yeah, that was fantastic. That was so much fun. I don't know about y'all, but I was really confused as to how Boise State could let that happen. Like, I feel like as a special teams coach, like, you got to be paying attention to the punter, like every possession, like every punt, like, okay, that's the punter out there. Like, we're good. No fake. Like, I don't know. It was a brain fart of a massive degree for Boise State. But Musab, how about you, man? Did you have any other big plays that stood out for you? Because I know there were kind of a lot.
I'll probably say, honestly, just the way Byron Brown performed, I feel like was just overall, like, I mean, just running over everyone. But I got to say, the one that got called back, unfortunately, that was my favorite Byron Brown play.
No, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, holy crap. They can't take this guy down. I mean, he's not even like, you know, he's not even like some, you know, Derrick Henry kind of size dude. But, I mean, he's tough. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He just doesn't go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely big for a quarterback.
An
American Conference quarterback. Let me, you know,
he's not like James Blackman or something.
You know? Right, exactly. He's definitely not DJ Lagway, who we'll get to eventually.
Yeah.
But he's still a bigger dude for the level of competition that USF is going to be playing. So it was definitely really fun to see him just kind of say, screw it, because he was very elusive. He's always been a very fast quarterback, super mobile. But I don't know that I ever saw him really like, you know, just lay the hit stick on guys. And that was really impressive. Jonathan, how about you, man? Were there any, I know we mentioned the defense, like, were there any big plays on that side of the ball maybe that really made you raise your eyebrow?
I mean, I think the fumble recovery they got on the first drive, because Boise was kind of going down the field. And I think that's kind of an overlooked point when you go back. And while it's like, wow, USF won 34-7. But through the first drive, I mean, Boise was kind of doing stuff at will. And then when we're talking about, you know, things that stood out, when you watch Byron Brown go out and seek contact at the goal line And it, when he could have just like rushed in, he's like, no, I'm going to run over another one of Boise's people in the secondary. It was, that was one of the ones you're like eye opening, like, wow, like it, we know what he did 2 years ago. He was hurt a lot of last year. Mm-hmm. And now you see him like this. And yeah, he didn't throw for a touchdown, but it's one of those plays when you watch the tape, it's like, wow, you know, like that's, it doesn't matter what conference you're in. It doesn't matter if you're the American, it doesn't matter if you're in the, you know, an FCS conference. It doesn't matter if you're in the SEC. You know, when you make plays like that, it's going to grab people's attention, especially when you're, what is he? He's 6'2", 6'3", 230. So, you know, that's not, people aren't supposed to, especially quarterback. Now I won't say people, but quarterbacks especially aren't supposed to move like that. But yeah, but the defense entirely, just the way that they were hitting, it just looked different from last year. I feel like a lot of the times last year, it didn't have this type of intensity, right? This type of drive to the ball. You know, Boise, and yes, they had Ashton Tensi last year. Boise ran the ball 38 times for 120 yards. That's 3.2 yards per carry. If you told Alex Gorse before the game you're holding Boise to right around 3 yards a carry, he would have shaken your hand and been like, okay, we probably win. Yeah, right. They won, and they blew him out for the most part. So, yeah, and I guess this is a question for you guys, and something that I've been grappling with is someone, you know, that follows the program. It's, you know, what's the ceiling for this team? You know, what are the realistic expectations? Because, you know, is the expectation to go 1-1 versus Miami and Florida? Is that the expectation? Or when we saw the schedule coming out and I saw they had Boise, Florida, Miami, I'm like, if you win one of those games, you probably take that. Because yes, let's be honest, you're not going to go into Florida and Miami and win both those games. And then when you look at the American, like, obviously Memphis has been really good for a really long time. Tulane's been really good for a really long time. But, you know, there's no reason why USF should not compete and be one of the three best teams in the American. So, yeah, I guess that's my question for you guys. Like, what are the expectations for this team? And you know, have those expectations changed?
That's a great question. I do think the expectations have gone from, hey, let's maybe like make another bowl game, let's maybe go to 7 or 8 wins this year, to, hey, we need to compete for the American Conference. Like, this is a really good team. I think that's sort of the elevated expectation. Like you mentioned, going 1-2 in this 3-game stretch is 2 thumbs up, like perfect. I would have taken that 12 days, you know, 12 times out of 10, like, no problem at all. No real expectation for them to beat Florida or Miami, frankly. Those are just, you know, those are the blue chip teams. And the way that they sequence this, this is going to sound bad, but the fact that they won their first game, like, first, and then they have to play Miami and Florida, it's kind of working against them a little bit, because now Florida and Miami, like, they're not going to be snuck up on. This isn't a trap game. Like, they saw what USF did to Boise State. Like, and the fact that it was such a dominant win, like, Florida and Miami, they're very well aware that USF is going to come in guns a-blazing. They've got the up-tempo offense and all that stuff. So they're not going to be caught off guard at all, unfortunately. So I don't necessarily see them winning these next two games, but I do think that 8 wins, 9 wins, competing for the American Conference, that should definitely be the goal, especially if Byron Brown manages to stay healthy this year. I know that's potentially a big if, you know, knock on all the woods and all that stuff. But yeah, I think that's probably the ceiling or the expectation for this team now. And it certainly has elevated. But Musab, do you have any, maybe you're shooting even higher. Maybe you think they can beat Florida or Miami. What are your thoughts on USF's expectations?
Oh man, I'd probably say, I mean, as of right now, the expectation is for sure to just to lock up the, you know, American Conference title. Other than Miami and Florida, I mean, I feel like, you know, we should definitely be able to handle, you know, the rest of the competition. But then again, it's not really just that you, Jonathan, but it's only been week one. So right. only so much we've seen from any team, you know, honestly. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Navy's just, you know, been up and down, had an up and down week one, and now they just come out swinging and now they're taking down every team. Who knows? But to have UF and Miami and having them back to back is definitely a challenge, of course, but it's definitely a good indicator as to where we really stand. In my opinion, I don't think Boise State, I think they've already dropped from the ranking. I don't think they're ever going to come close to top 25 the way they looked. But so that being said, I think the ceiling is just to lock in the American title, put up a good fight, at least against UF and Miami. That's going to be tough, though, especially going back to back. But, you know, this is the only way to kind of really gain respect you know, if you want to play better teams, is to be able to hang with them. So I feel like, you know, USF losing last year to Bama. I mean, obviously we all knew that it was coming, but I think everyone gives props to them for, again, for holding, you know, holding it down at least for three quarters before it all went downhill. But yeah.
I think that it should be respected that they're scheduling these teams. And I think, and hopefully the way that the playoff committee has said it, and, you know, I'm not going on here saying USF's going to make the playoff, but like if USF finishes 10-2, 9-3, for example, USF should be in the playoff over a UNLV that goes 11-1 because they went out and had the marbles to go schedule Florida and Miami. Like, it would be very easy for USF to go schedule FAMU, you know, and Bethune-Cookman. You know, I mean, it would be very easy for them to do that instead of playing Florida, Miami. But it's the type of competitor that Alex Goldish is, and is the reason why he's thought of so highly in about moving up eventually. And there's a reason why he's really able to pick what job he wants at the Power Five level when it eventually comes to that. And it's something I find extremely admirable, because they went into the Swamp 3 years ago and were a botched field goal away from tying the game at Florida. Now, that Florida team didn't turn out to be very good, obviously, but it doesn't matter. To be frank, like, when USF and Florida play, it should never be entirely competitive. Yeah. It's just the way that the budgets are different. NIL, they recruit differently. Florida had 3 5-star receivers coming. You know, it's just different. But I think that the way that they have scheduled is something that is incredibly impressive, in my opinion, and should not be looked down upon. Like, when we see the schedule and see Boise, Florida, Miami, it shouldn't be, oh man, that hopefully go 1-2. It should be, look at us going out and scheduling these games and not being afraid of, you know, probably coming out of that with 2 losses at the best.
Yeah, 100%. And I hope, like you said, I would hope that the playoff committee, if USF manages to win their conference and do all that, I would hope that they would, I don't want to say dismiss the 2 losses versus UF and Miami, but they would at least put it in proper context. And when, like you said, comparing them to Mountain West Conference winner XYZ or whoever the heck else, like, if USF manages to win their conference and they only lose like one other game, that's a pretty darn good season. And that's at least worth discussing whether or not they should let them in, if not let them in, you know, from the get-go. So yeah, I'm with you there. It's definitely going to be a conversation to be had. You know how the playoff committee is, they can be doing some weird stuff. So I don't want to give them too much credit, to be quite honest, but it'll definitely be interesting to see how that all plays out, especially if USF can manage to put together an American Conference title. But before we move on to the UF game, because I certainly want to, especially Jonathan, you're a big UF guy, so I'd love to hear your thoughts, but players of the game, I wanted to focus on, still, you know, give these guys their flowers. For me, it was definitely a kind of a co-player of the game. I'm kind of copping out here. Mac Harris and Jalen Schuler, the two starting linebackers, just massive on the defensive side of the ball, obviously with the forced fumble that Jonathan brought up earlier. And Schuler won Walter Camp National FBS Defensive Player of the Week. That's pretty impressive. That's pretty cool. USF doesn't get honors like that all the time. But not to be outdone, Mac Harris had a great game too. But I wanted to hear y'all's thoughts. Musab, who's your player of the game from this past week?
It's got to go to Byron Brown, especially returning from that 2024 leg injury, and to come out like that swinging and, not being afraid to take a hit or two or to, you know, truck a couple of guys. Amazing.
Yeah, it was a statement for him, for sure. Like, I'm sure a lot of people had a little bit of trepidations about how he was going to bounce back from such a seemingly major injury. Like, no one really kind of knew what was going on last year. Like, there was, oh, is he going to play this week? It was constantly sort of a weird battle with Alex Golish and the injury report. It was just kind of a weird situation. But thankfully, he looked just as good as he did that 2 years ago when he was up there with Jalen Daniels, you know, putting up insane numbers. But Jonathan, how about you? Are you a Byron Brown player of the game guy as well?
No, I lean with you with Harrison and Schuler because of where this defense was last year. I mean, they like, yes, it is an accomplishment to some extent to hold Alabama close in Tuscaloosa going into the fourth quarter, right? But the thing that impressed me most about this team, when you look up and down, at least at the top players from last game, is guys that are like homegrown guys from USF. Like, Byron Brown is a homegrown guy. So is Harrison Schuler. So in an era of the transfer portal, now USF has their fair share of guys that they got in the portal, obviously. But at the mid-major level, especially, And the way that these Power Five teams, they could say, oh, Shuler, you had X amount of tackles. You had 62 tackles last year. You had 97 2 years ago. That's a pretty good player. Hey, it's Deion Sanders of Colorado. How about you come play and we'll give you $250,000, you know what I mean, or something like that. So, once again, I'm going to hype Alex Goldish a lot this season, and especially any chance I get, because I think so highly of him as a coach. And that speaks to it. It speaks to the culture that they've built. So I'm kind of expanding on your player of the game question, because I thought it was important to highlight that the three best players on the field for USF were all homegrown guys. And then when you look at the guys that they got in the portal, it's still a lot of guys that are like their second, third year in the program that they might have gotten from the transfer portal 2 years ago. So, again, like they said, the USF has their fair share of guys that they got in the portal. So the way college sports is now. But it is extremely impressive at a school like USF that you're able to retain high-quality talent in this regard without the NIL that the Power Four schools have. So definitely want to shout that out, as well as really the entire defense for their performance.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, obviously, the cornerback room. Deshaun Rucker is technically a transfer from Tennessee, but he's been in the program couple years now.
You're in the program, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a lot of different guys that, like you said, have either been in the program for a few years or have just been homegrown. You know, they were recruited out of high school or community college and whatnot. So it's been really impressive to see, for sure. Even last year, like Naquan Wright, their running back, like he was
from Florida.
Yeah, he came from Florida. That's right. He was a couple of years at the USF program, and then he, you know, moved on. And I think he signed with the Colts. Shout out Naquan Wright. I hope he has a successful NFL career. But it's definitely speaking to something to look at their team and see that there's not just like, oh, well, this guy's here for a year and then he's done. You know, it's definitely more of a group of guys that are sticking around and finding some success in this Alex Goldish system. That great shout for sure. And the defensive line, I think, like Mac Harris and Michael Williams, the two edge players, I think both of those guys, I believe, have been either with USF a few years now or their entire college career. So that's pretty cool as well. A lot of homegrown talent for sure. But moving on to the UF game, there's another game this week. They don't stop coming. I know we've kind of talked about it. Musab, we'll start with you, man. Do you think they have any chance against UF this weekend? Or are you kind of just like, hey, as long as it's not a total blowout, you're kind of happy? What are your thoughts on this upcoming game against the Gators?
Oof, this one's going to be real good, man. I think USF has the capability, of course. You know, I think I believe actually right now the spread is, what, -17.5, -18. So, I'm not a huge betting guy, so I'm not going to say, you know, bet on the USF spread. But one thing, though, is we got to control the clock. You know what I'm saying? Because even against Boise, we didn't control the clock. We were still able to make things happen. But, this was something that, you know, we were having issues with even last year. So first thing first is, yeah, we got to keep Lagway and company off the field, if we want to especially give our defensive guys the rest. But on top of that, I mean, yeah, just, you know, limiting the run game, watching over on the turnovers, those kind of things. We just got to be playing smart. You know, the way we played against Boise, I like that. We're going to have to, of course, you know, go about a different approach because, this UF team is definitely going to be better than Boise for sure. So I think we have the capability. It's just, you know, we come out and we just got to do what we can.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because, like, their identity offensively is so much like that turbo type of offense. But at the same time, like you said, giving DJ Lagway a bunch of time to come onto the field, that's not great. And UF's got just athletes on top of athletes on top of athletes. So, like, they're going to be in great shape. Like, these aren't American Conference. You know, you're not playing Rice or Charlotte where you can kind of push the tempo and tire the defense out and get them to make some silly mistakes. Like, it's UF. They've got athletes. These guys are, you know, D1 track athletes as well. They could be, you know, so it's going to be tough. You know, I don't know if Goldish changes his game plan at all, or maybe he looks at, like you said, controlling the clock a little bit more. That might be something for them to explore. But Jonathan, do you have any other ideas where USF could maybe hold an advantage against a team with just like 5-star, 4-star pretty much everywhere?
Advantage, no, to be honest. Right. But it's, can they be competitive on the line of scrimmage? That's the question. Is Brown going to be able to run like it against Boise? Like, probably not to an extent. But the biggest mismatches in these type of games when you go up to the power conference is the play on the line of scrimmage. I'll tell you right now, Florida has four guys on the defensive line that are going to get drafted eventually. Yeah. They have Caleb Banks, who didn't play last week because it's not an overly serious injury, but he's a projected like top 20 pick. They have the first team All-American at center coming back. Their left tackle, Austin Barber, is being mocked in first rounds. Like like you said, this isn't Boise. This is legit. You're playing against NFL players. So if USF can be competitive on line of scrimmage, like, yes, this game might be competitive. This game will be competitive, and it will be a four-quarter game. Skill positions are great, right? Everything starts with the line of scrimmage. Brown is not going to have time to do anything if he's getting blitzkrieged by George Gums and Jaden Woods and Caleb Banks and three steps into his drop. So that's the number one thing I'll be looking at. And, you know, obviously I have been following Florida for a very long time. Florida's linebacker room, I think is most underrated in the entire country. I think they have four NFL guys at linebacker, and they rotate them. That's another difference between, you know, the power in mid-major level is that Florida is going to rotate guys, and they got 10 guys on their defensive line that they're going to play. They got four guys at linebacker that they're going to play. They have three guys in their cornerback room that they really trust, and they got four safeties that they trust. And they're going to rotate the guys. I say it because you speak to the up-tempo offense that Alex Goldish runs. And I think Florida, to an extent, is equipped to enable that to guard that with their depth. But there is no coach in the country under no more pressure than Billy Napier. He has the guy at quarterback. You have the receivers. You return four of your five stars on the offensive line that have been not just one year, multi-year starters. You return Jaden Baugh at running back, who I don't know if you guys have seen this guy.
Yeah, he's insane.
He's 235 and that has wiggle, and he broke about every single lifting record at the University of Florida this offseason. You know, he's an alien. Yeah. So all that is great, but it becomes as simple as, can you block the man in front of you? Can the USF offensive line hold up enough to give their playmakers time? Because USF is different from a lot of teams in the American, maybe outside of Tulane, that has these different kind of difference makers on the outside and at quarterback. And, you know, we talked about the level of production for the defense. Can that translate? And it obviously is not going to translate. They're not going to hold Florida to 7 points, but can they hold them under 30? I think that's a pretty big number if they can hold Florida under 30. So it all goes back. What are the expectations, right? Is the expectation for USF to win? Is it for them to keep it competitive? Are there people out there saying, oh, it's a week one mirage. They're going to get, you know, they're going to get killed? Because you guys do NFL stuff, obviously. Every year in the NFL, there's people that are complete pretenders through the first 2 weeks. The Saints last year, and I said it when the Saints were lighting the NFL on fire and Derek Carr was MVP after 2 weeks. Like, they're one of the worst teams in football. They're going to come back to earth, and it happened. So I'm not saying this guy happened to USF. Like, I think USF has really promising pieces all over the field, specifically in their front seven on defense. But it's an exaggerated way of saying if USF is competitive on line of scrimmage, they will be competitive in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's tough because, like you said, like UF's got like four NFL starters, you know, like Caleb Banks and then Tyreek Sapp and then all these other guys.
Yeah. I did all that without even mentioning Tyreek Sapp, who's probably the best player on the
team. He might be their best player on defense. Yeah. And like, that's not even a diss on the other guys. Tyreek Sapp's really freaking good. Like, it's just, it's bonkers. Line of scrimmage is always really, really important. I don't know if USF holds up or not in that area, but, you know, we'll see. I'd be curious to see how many more trick plays they have, because I know they pulled out the fake punt where they brought out the backup quarterback against Boise State. We talked about it already. I don't know if they can do any stuff like that again, or if they have any more kind of tricks up their sleeve. I know last year when they played Miami at Raymond James, they had like the weird onside kick where they kind of kicked it a little bit further than an onside kick and managed to almost recover it, but I think it was called back or something. But if they can pull some stuff out like that, maybe they can keep it close in the first half. But you always see it with these sort of mismatch games where the first half is like sort of competitive and then the reality sets in and it's like, oh, okay, this is a boat race and it's kind of tough. But we saw, are there any other areas that maybe USF could hold an advantage against a team like UF? I don't know.
Jonathan's kind of got me. Yeah, you kind of got me scared now, Jonathan. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, no, you have great points. I don't know. These are all valid, great points. I agree with you. I mean, yeah, UF's a different animal. It's going to be different from Boise. I think the whole world should know that by now. But we're going to have to get a little bit creative, you know, when it comes to, you know, opening run lanes for Byron Brown, maybe doing some RPOs, even on top of that, I mean, you know, with the aggressive, you know, D-line and edge rushers that UF have, I don't know, getting even a little creative with the run game, you know, doing some wheel routes or something. Yeah, but no, I don't think there's any room for any sorts of trick plays. I think that was more of a week one shenanigan, and I think it was like, let's just see if we can actually get away with this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But sheesh, yeah, to be honest, I'm more and more excited after everything Jonathan said. Yeah.
Yeah,
I will say there is – Billy Napier, the Florida coach, has been known, and it happened 3 years ago in his first year, to not blow out teams like this. Like, Florida played Charlotte and won, like, 21 to 10 in one of the games. You know what I mean? And Charlotte is, like, at the bottom of the American, to put it nicely, you know? So there has been times in years past where Florida has not put the foot on the throat of these less talented teams. And I think this USF team is more talented. I know that this USF team is more talented than some of the teams that Florida struggled with in the past. Now, if Florida doesn't make the playoff this year, like, Billy Napier might get fired. That's the type of pressure that he's under. That's the type of expectation at the University of Florida. But, you know, University of Florida is also one of the 10 biggest brands in all of college football. So, you know, I hope that a lot of the players relish the experience, because there's not many times where you get to go play in an atmosphere like the Swamp in front of 90,000 people and one of the five loudest places to play in all of the country. But I didn't want to sound all doom and gloom there. Like, there is ways where USF stay in this game. And as a guy that's watched a lot of Florida football, you know, I would be kind of surprised if this game isn't competitive at halftime, isn't competitive in third quarter, just based on what I've seen with Billy Napier's track record the past 3 years. And, you know, I think Billy Napier is an all-time great human being. But there's stuff as a football coach that is left to be desired. And with a great coach like Alex Goldis that can take advantage of it, unlike a lot of, you know, teams at this level, I think it's going to be like, for example, Florida played Tulane in the bowl game last year without Tulane's starting quarterback.
Right. Yeah.
And that game was semi-competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Tulane couldn't move the ball at all because they were playing with like their third quarterback. But
right.
It was a guy that was actually already in the transfer portal, speaking of the way that the you know, college football was played. But,
right,
you know, that game was competitive. So, yeah, I don't think this is going to be a 55-0 game. Like, I think Florida probably wins like 31-14 or 17, somewhere in that range.
Man, if that happens, if they manage to keep it that close, I think USF's in good shape. That would be an ideal final score for me. I hear you, and it's definitely going to be fun. And either way, even if it's a blowout, because UF's got a lot of fun players. You know, even if it's a blowout, we'll still get to see UF players that are really, really good. I know we talked about Tyreek Sapp and Caleb Banks, but are there any other players that you're kind of thinking of that kind of scare you the most on this UF team for USF, or even if they're just like fun NFL prospects? Musab, I'll start with you, man. Is there anyone that kind of stands out for you on this UF team talent-wise?
Probably just, I mean, DJ Lagway. We gotta find a way just to slow him down, toy around with him, attack him, be aggressive. I mean, they got plenty of great weapons. That's the thing. But, you know, we're gonna have to go after DJ Lagway just because of his, you know, his capability of also, you know, running the ball as well. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think DJ, I mean, I don't think like DJ Lagway is the best quarterback they're gonna face this season. How am I spacing on his name? The Miami Carson Beck. Yeah, I know Carson Beck's pretty good, but like DJ Lagway, he's like being talked about as like a first round pick, like bona fide, whenever he declares for the draft, and rightfully so. Like he's elite. His dual threat ability, you know, almost second to none. Like definitely him, Lenora Sellers. Like it's a very short list of quarterbacks in college football right now that have that type of talent. So yeah, it's going to be tough. He's going to be like one of the most athletic players on the field most of the time. Even with UF having like elite athletes all over the place, like DJ Lagway's up there, like he's insane. So yeah, it's going to be tough to contain him for sure, especially if USF can't win that line of scrimmage battle that Jonathan was talking about. But Jonathan, is there anyone else that maybe we haven't mentioned? Maybe some skill position guys that UF has that you're really looking at, especially against USF?
Yeah, Vernell Brown III is a five-star freshman that Florida had. You guys probably saw the crazy one-handed catch against Long Island. Dallas Wilson, he didn't play against Long Island, but he's Jeremiah Smith-esque in the type of production that he can have as a freshman. He has the same kind of build. He had a pretty, not severe, but, you know, he hasn't played in 3 weeks with a lower body injury. Trey Wilson is a guy that 2 years ago was a freshman All-American and caught over 60 balls, and he's back this year and healthy. So, you know, the list goes on and on. Like, Florida's got skill position galore. But watch out for Jaden Ball. If I was a USS fan, didn't know a lot about Florida, number 13 that's going to line up next to DJ Lagway is an alien. So, you know, hopefully that he's not running for 60-yard gains every single time. But he is a unique player at just being a sophomore. He's built different. He's an NFL back that's playing in college. So he's one guy that if I'm Alex Gorsh, I'm circling in red marker saying this guy can't beat us. But that goes to, you can't blitz DJ Lagway because DJ Lagway had a 70% completion percentage on deep balls last year. Like, that's unheard of. So yeah. USF is going to have to, you know, kind of bear the line of, okay, we need to sit back in coverage or else DJ Lagway to take the top off, but we're probably not going to get pressure with sending four. And then, so yeah, that's another one of the things that I'm looking at. And then, yeah, containing number 13 in blue will be big as well, Jaden Ball.
Yeah, I mean, people think of Caden Durham out of LSU as sort of the big SEC running back, and rightfully so. That guy's also a monster. But, yeah, Ball is definitely working his way up there for sure. And, yeah, I don't know. Trey Wilson's also really, really freaking good too. Just really good players all over the place for UF. It's definitely going to be a really difficult game for USF. But, hey, crazier things have happened, right? You know, Appalachian State beat Michigan. You know, yeah. not comparing USF to Appalachian State or anything. But, crazier stuff has happened. So before we hop off and before we finish this episode, we'll toss out some predictions because why not, just for fun. Jonathan, I knew you said 31-17. Are you sticking with that? Is that your?
Yeah, I'll do 34-14, but it's a four-quarter game. Gotcha. It'll be a four-quarter game.
Cool. I like that. 34-14. Musab, how about you? You got USF winning? Are you going bold, or are you gonna, you know, be real, a little bit more?
I'm hoping. I'm somewhat optimistic that, you know, USF's able to do something, but I do think that we're gonna lose. I got 38-24 UF.
All right. Yeah. 38-24 UF. We're kind of all in the same range here. I'll probably do 31-10 UF. I think USF's offense gets, I don't want to say a reality check, but I think they kind of get hit in the mouth a little bit, especially with their offensive line. Not, you know, Boise State had some good players on defense, not trying to disrespect Boise State, but this is just a very different thing. And I think they get hit in the mouth a little bit. But you know, UF, like Jonathan was saying, maybe they kind of ease up on the gas pedal a little bit because it's a Billy Napier team. And Billy Napier, shout out to him because he coached at Louisiana Lafayette, Raging Cajuns. You know, go Cajuns. I'm from Louisiana, so you know, shout out to them. But yeah, it should be a fun game, and we'll be back next week. Thank you all for tuning in and for listening. Definitely hit that like and subscribe button if you liked what you heard and you want to keep hearing USF stuff. You can also give us a follow at RBLR Sports or at RBLR Bulls. Definitely check us out on social medias. Thank you to my co-hosts, Jonathan Shields and Musab Tariq, for making my job incredibly easier. We'll see y'all next week no matter what. But until then, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.